Hey, Dog Speak Geeks, do you know that we offer virtual lessons? You can sign up at any time through info@dogspeak101.com. Also, don't miss out on our dog communication seminar on demand or one of our live seminars in Middle Tennessee. We would love to assist you with any and all problems that you have, so give us a call, set up your session today. Welcome to Dog Speak, redefining dog training. Yeah, I still don't know if it's going to hit, y'all. Hey, guys, it's Nikki. Ooh, hope y'all are having a great week. I have a special guest today. I know y'all haven't had a guest on here for a while. You're probably tired of just listening to me. But I have a very special guest that has come back, I think only because she had nothing to do today as her dogs were getting groomed. So I'm going to take advantage of it. Y'all, I got Amanda back, our canine PT, used to be puppy specialist. She left me. And now she's just doing her own shit. Amanda, what's up?
Not a whole lot. Actually, a lot is going on. A lot since I've been here last. We have a lot to catch up on.
We do.
We have a lot to talk about.
We do.
We share a lot of clients.
We do. And if you've ever had a dog with some pain or discomfort or not knowing what's going on and you've tried your vets and they can't figure it out, well, this is what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to talk about how important physical therapy is for dogs. We're going to talk about, and really, y'all, we're really flying by the seat of our pants on this, just so you know. Like, I knew we were going to record this from like last week, but then it's been so busy. I had to go out to California with my niece for like a whole 36, 48 hours to look at a college. So I am not prepared, but hey, we usually do a pretty good job at just gabbing. I mean, you've been here for almost like 2 hours and we have done nothing but catch up. Because I've seen you, this is only twice this year.
I know.
I've seen you.
It's been too long.
It's ridiculous. I'm blaming it on you.
Okay.
So, okay, good. You're the one that travels everywhere and goes everywhere. My ass just stays right here. Oh, except for that California trip for 48 hours. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and that Savannah, Georgia trip I'm taking, that if you guys want to get in for a session, you better book it now. Or if you just want to buy me a drink, that's fine too. I don't care. Willow and I be there. We got things to do.
Just link your Venmo to this and then
I think that's
send her a fiver for
that's it.
A beer.
That's right. If you want to like send me money for my trip, that'd be awesome too. You're right. That's great. Add DogSpeak, people. Just add DogSpeak on Venmo. So tell everybody what you've been doing.
I was thinking last night, I was like, when was the last time I was on this podcast? And I think it was when I first started the canine PT school.
Holy like, crap.
I don't think I had been certified yet.
That's a long
time.
We'd have
to go back. The real ones will know. But I think I hadn't yet started my business full time.
No, I don't think you've started the business full time.
Yeah.
I feel like you had at least started your training.
I think I'd started training and was thinking I would do this part time and that quickly turned full time.
It really did.
Mm-hmm.
So Nashville, you're not even doing people.
I see doing like 3 people a month, okay. But I'm not actively taking human clients anymore. It's people that I've seen for years and they just need like a tune up or some dry needling or something. So
okay.
I'm full-time dogs and never looking back.
That is awesome. So she used to be a human PT and she said, screw that.
That lasted about 2 years. No.
It really didn't last long, did it? Because you were in school whenever I met you.
Yeah. But so, to be fair, I was in the human PT world for 10 years.
Okay.
Because I worked as a tech in undergrad and worked all through school. So I've been in the human world, in the human rehab world for 10 years. And then dogs are just better.
They're just better.
Actually, I had a client yesterday say something about, oh, you know, if I did what my doctors would tell me to do, I'd feel a lot better, but I'm too busy worrying about my dogs. And I was like, that is exactly why I stopped treating humans.
They don't do what they're supposed to do.
They will take care of their dogs before they'll take care of themselves.
Yeah.
And not only do I love dogs, it's just I love the follow-up, the follow-through. You want nothing more than your dog to be happy, healthy, and moving well.
Yep.
And I think everyone knows their time is limited with their dog. So it's the pressure to heal is a lot higher, and it hurts them more to see their dog in pain than it hurts them for themselves to be in pain.
It makes sense because we have such a shorter time and we want that time of their life to be so pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
But, and also I think another thing I'm thinking about is watching a dog improve organically and knowing that it's not just a placebo effect of someone thinking they feel better or because they've taken 4 ibuprofen, you know, right, every 4 hours, and that's why they feel better. It's just a, you literally know when a dog is doing better. And that's the same thing. It's like when I go and see a client with a dog who has shown me some behavior that I'm like, oh, I know this dog could be feeling better. And then I come in a month later and I'm like, holy shit, this is a different dog.
Yeah.
And the owners don't necessarily see it immediately until you start pointing some things out. Where I'm like, wow, I've never seen this dog do this. And you go, this is not a dog making it up to make me feel better.
Right.
They literally feel better.
Right. They're not going to lie about doing their homework.
Exactly.
Because the dog either knows what they're doing or they don't.
Exactly.
But the other cool thing is just the bonding experience that it gives. It empowers the human to be able to care for their dog in a way that no one has, like the vet's not going to tell you what exactly. Some vets have protocols or they'll try to guide you on stretching. But the daily exercise activity for a very specific injury or weakness or something, it's a bonding experience. And that's what I think is cool about like our relationship is you talk about like the relationship with your dog. And it's like, this is adding on to that. And yes, they now see you as someone that can help. Not only are you feeding them treats, but you're helping them heal and you're doing fun new exercises. It's physically exhausting. It's mentally exhausting for both you and the dog. But it's, yeah, the dogs are so happy after they're doing their rehab and they're always excited to see me, which is, people think it's kind of funny because you think, oh, well, all the manual stuff isn't necessarily comfortable or fun. Or,
right.
It's necessary, but that outweighs, I think, the bonding experience I get with each dog that's compounded with treats, toys, whatever their mm-hmm. favorite item is to get them to do the exercise. And it's all positive, force-free. And I end up building really great relationships with the dogs, which is fun. And the owners, of course, on the other hand, are like, oh my gosh, they just love you and yeah, they're doing so much better. And like, I get to play with dogs all day. This is great.
I know, right? And get to help alleviate the pain that they're feeling.
Yeah.
And give them that kind of sense of maybe being able to take that kind of big sigh, that big breath of being like, oh, thank God somebody finally understands what I'm going through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to know I'm not alone in this.
Right.
And then I can imagine that bonding that it would create between the human and the dog, because the human is being able to kind of see maybe even better that they are helping their dog in a situation where there's physical pain. Whereas in my case, it's like, it takes a lot of time for that behavioral changes to take place. And I know that a lot of my clients can feel frustration that they, mm-hmm. that they either are not doing it right or that what they're doing is not working. When in reality, it just takes time to get any type of change,
yeah,
right? Emotional, physical. But when I see these clients buckle down and they do what they need to do and they start to see that change, man, I really do believe it changes that relationship to a place where I don't think they realized
right.
that they could get to, that it gets better than what they believed it could be. That mm-hmm. they already thought they had a great relationship, right?
Right.
But it does go above and beyond.
Yeah.
When and you get down to it.
Exactly. And I think some of the psyche, both for the mental healing that you do and the physical healing I do,
mm-hmm.
the owners have this hesitation of, I'm making their world so small, they're going to have no fun. It's not, and it's like, no, you have to let them heal.
Yes.
Before you can make their world 10 times, yes. 100 times better. And some clients are like, yep, get it, understood. Some client, and they take crate rest to the extreme, and you're like, you're doing 110%. This is great. Some clients, you have to have a come to Jesus talk
yep.
with them.
Yep.
And it's after the third one that you're like, it finally clicked. Okay. Yep. This is, and then you start to see all of this like exponential growth and healing from the dog. And they're like, the light bulb happens. It's like, oh, this now makes sense.
Yeah.
And the dog ends up healing as they should, and their mental state is a lot better. And we've worked a couple clients together, and it's like, some weeks it's more mental, some weeks it's more physical. And then it's, well, now they're angry again. It's like, okay, well, let's check over their body again.
Right.
And, oh, this is probably why they're a little bit more pissed off this week. And so,
yeah,
that's a huge thing. Like, I see that a lot with packs, like two or more dogs in the house. If all of a sudden one dog becomes grumpy or short or snippy or gets an attitude, or if like the aura of the dog changes, it's like, that doesn't just happen.
Right.
Dogs don't just wake up in a shitty mood.
Not like we do.
There's something that's causing them to all of a sudden change.
Yes.
So that's been really cool to see and be able to like nip that before it turns into a huge protection mechanism.
Yes.
And now you have this aggressive dog because they think every dog is going to try to hurt them, because when they try to back away, their paw hurts or something.
Right.
So to get that like really early on, and I've had a couple clients that they're like, this is the sweetest dog, and then he just snapped at his sister. It's like, oh, let's look at this. And it's like, oh, well, there was a infected toenail or something. Yep. And now the dog's back to himself.
Yep.
So, and I can only imagine how often that infected toenail goes unnoticed, un-x-rayed, unaware. Not to anyone's fault. How are you going to see that?
Right.
And the dog's not limping. The dog's acting normal. It's just angry at its sister all of a sudden. And then they call you and they're like, I now have dog-on-dog aggression.
Yep.
So that's been really cool to see that behavior and physical component come together and also dissolve together.
Yeah, it's whenever we get people giving us a call, I usually always say, all right, there's going to be probably some discomfort here. And I usually ask them, have you been to the vet? Yeah, we've done a full workup. And then I have to question, was it really a full workup that's really needed? Because just like in every profession, right? If I'm having a flare up with my tendonitis in my arm, I'm not going to go see my gynecologist for it.
Right.
Right. Not that my gynecologist is not a phenomenal doctor. She's phenomenal. But she doesn't do that.
Right. It's not her lane.
It's not her lane. So when I see dogs, I'm like, okay, let's get this thing started and move in with the foundation work. And then when I get them in person, so many times I'm like, this dog has some discomfort, whether it's where I'm touching and seeing some changes, the way they're walking, the way they're laying down, the way they're standing up, just even the way they're protecting themselves and how they position themselves in a room just for that protection. And I'll say, your dog's got some pain. Well, we went to the vet. Well, there's something going on. Right. I am not a veterinarian. I can't do a physical workup. I can tell you where I'm seeing some discomfort. But that's about all I got for you, right?
Right.
What is one of the most common kind of complaints, or I guess not really complaints because the dog can't be like, hey, I'm not feeling good here. What are the things you work with the most, I think is what I'm trying to ask. Because I think what's kind of that common, because for me, the common thing I see is dogs that are feeling frustrated and unsure about their environment because of some type of pain and that's not being recognized. And of course, we all know that pain rewires the brain,
right?
Especially chronic pain is going to rewire the brain. And dogs are not going to be showing you all this discomfort until it gets really bad. And then when they get really bad, they start limping. They take them to the vet. Vet's like, can't find anything. So here's some rest
and Rimadol.
And Rimadol, exactly. Right. Here's some anti-inflammatory. Here's some trazodone for pain. And then we'll recheck it. When sometimes it's maybe the limp is because something's thrown out on the other side. And they've been putting so much weight on the other side that it's now causing issues there. I don't know. You tell me. You're the expert.
I would say there's four categories. The smallest one right now, it kind of comes and goes. But the smallest one would be like the behavior ones where we've tried everything and there's no signs of lameness, but we think it might be part of the problem. Like clients that you send to me directly, that's a small portion. And then I would have three other main categories, which would be like a neurological problem, which is if your dog has IVDD or an FCE. So those are both conditions of the spine. And very briefly, it's essentially if your dog all of a sudden becomes paralyzed. Mm. It's scary.
Listen up, dachshund owners.
Dachshunds and Frenchies. And doodles and poodles.
Really?
Those are the most common. It's also pretty common in German Shepherds.
Okay.
But number one way to prevent that is make sure your dog's not overweight. If anything, have them a little bit underweight. But so you have the traumatic neurological problems. I have a good handful of those. I have another good handful of surgery recovery.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So like a torn CCL, which is equivalent to the human ACL, knee injuries. And that too is something that may or may not be surgically repaired. So some dogs with kidney issues can't go under anesthesia.
Oh, okay.
So you can rehab a CCL just like you would a human. Not all humans. If it's a minor tear, you don't have to have surgery on your ACL.
Wish you were around one day and had her crap. Damn.
So surgical, yeah, surgical or non-surgical injuries. And even if they can't, some owners, there's pretty good evidence that dogs recover fairly well without surgery. So if cost is an issue, because it's easy, a $5,000 surgery. If you don't have pet insurance, like that's a lot. So surgical, non-surgical injuries are a big one. And then I have a lot of geriatric dogs that they're getting weaker, or they just want to make sure that they maintain healthy joints and muscle and flexibility as they age. So that those are like the three main categories, and then this tiny subcategory of what's hurting that's causing the behavior issue. So those are like the 3/4 main categories that I see.
I think that the one I want to start with, because I think it might be one of the best topics for this particular episode, because I know that if I start with the topic of behavior stuff, it's going to turn into something of a Nikki show. So, and that's, I'm on here every week. I want to talk about the geriatric part, right? Yeah. So as our dogs are aging,
yes,
and they're starting to have some problems, so we know that obviously keeping that weight down, I'm always big on having a dog more just under ideal weight mm-hmm. than over any mm-hmm. day of the week. I'd much rather see my dogs a little bit skinnier, mm-hmm. which is probably why I've never had the big bulky Rottweiler. But as you mentioned today, my Rottweiler is one of the smallest. She's, again, I can't seem to get a big Rottie. Anyway, what are some of the things that you would recommend for owners? What are some of the things that they can maybe focus, maybe pick three things or something that owners can focus on right now mm-hmm. with their dogs to ensure that we're having more flexibility and movement as they're aging?
Yeah. So this goes for older dogs, but it also is something for younger, like dogs of all age. The number one thing that I look at is how does the dog sit? When you ask them to sit, some people think, oh, it's just, they're just sloppy mm-hmm. or they're lazy. They just always sit like that. Or
call it the puppy sit.
Yeah. Yep. Or the foot is kicked out or it slides out. If the sit isn't square with both paws flat on the floor, both back paws flat on the floor, something's not moving like it should. Is it its back, the hips, the ankles, the knees, the toes? Something is not moving like it should. So the assessment of the sit is a huge indicator of how the back end is working. So,
holy shit. See, I'm learning something new today. I'm like, hell, that's awesome. Okay, cool. All right.
Yeah. So a lot of times I'll give owners the simple sit to stand, but make sure it's square, it's proper, and then you don't let the dog rock back onto its sit bones. So if you can see the bottom of your dog's feet when it's sitting, that's not good.
Okay.
We need to fix that. That would be the number one assessment for dogs of any age. Older dogs, typically the complaint is They just don't walk like they used to. They're getting up a lot slower. They're just moving a lot less, seeming like they're losing the enjoyment from normal activities.
Yes.
And people are like, oh, they're just getting old.
Yeah. And we tend to be okay with that.
Yeah. And that's not really, that's not okay. Because something hurts. If it's a big dog, for older dogs, I like to recommend a slightly elevated food bowl. I know that's a very controversial topic regarding bloat.
Right.
But if they're older and they're having to bend their elbows a little bit and drop their neck all the way to the floor and hold that, that's like an isometric. You try pushing your hands together and holding that for as long as you eat a meal.
Oh, God.
That's exhausting. You don't want to have to like do an isometric hold to eat. So kind of off waiting everyday activities, watching how they go on steps. If you can slow them, a lot of dogs will try to go fast because they can't go slow, or they'll 2-foot hop up and down steps or off of furniture. That's not necessarily indicative of a hip issue, but it could be indicative of tightness or pain somewhere else.
Okay.
Diet comes in huge with older dogs. So making sure they're getting their omegas and healthy foods.
Yes, y'all hear us preach about that all the time.
Fruits and vegetables. Make sure their guts are working. If your dog hasn't had their vitamin B12 and D tested, every dog, that should be on the main blood work, in my opinion.
Okay, and see, and that is the things that we need to, like, these are what I want my listeners to know, right?
Yeah.
What are the things that you need to be doing, you know, from the viewpoint of someone who specializes in things to help your dog with longevity and feeling the best that they can. And nobody ever talks about the B12.
Yeah.
Right? Unless you have a dog who, I don't know, their appetite's not great. All right, let's get them a B12 shot. Right. But nobody's thinking about maintenance. Because I personally think that we should be making these intolerant sensitivity tests, whether it's a hair test or a saliva test for these dogs. I think we need to be doing it yearly, if not every other year. I've already done one with Willow.
Yeah.
Before she was a year old, I did a sensitivity test to help with that inflammation. Because as that inflammation builds up, everything falls apart.
Right.
I mean, I did my hair test, and I know what causes inflammation in me. But I've been eating quite a bit of it lately and drinking it. Okay. Yes, I've had some margaritas and lime and tequila is my inflammatories. I am bloated like a bitch right now. And not only am I bloated like a bitch, but I can tell that, number one, my brain is not working as well.
Right.
I have not been as creative. Mm-hmm. I've not gotten as much work done as I need to. The other is I do feel that my body is slower and sluggish. Mm-hmm. Even I'm, you know, sucking caffeine down. Not you're trying just to get something kick-started, but I also don't have that motivation to go work out. And work out is, and anybody that's listening to this podcast as long as, you know, I've had it on, working out is my mental health.
Yeah.
So for me to not have that, I can at least express that, and I can make those choices for myself.
Yeah.
Our dogs are really counting on us to help with that.
Right.
So I'm with you. Like, getting these kind of, what I'd say, health care instead of sick care, if we really focus on that. So I think that's something that people should start asking specifically when they get their yearly blood work done.
Yeah. Especially if your dog's ever had quote unquote random diarrhea.
Ah, yes.
That's a huge one. And I would argue that I've yet to meet a puppy that's never had random diarrhea.
Right. Like, and that Giardia is typically the one that they use for all of that.
And I feel like most doctors still only do like a 1-week Giardia panicure, and it should be done in a sequence of 3 to get rid of Giardia completely.
Say, there you go. Learning all kinds of things, y'all.
So if that's the case, I mean, you've talked a lot about the gut is the key to the mental health, and it's also the key to the physical health, because if your body's not absorbing, if the dog's body's not absorbing the nutrients it needs, it's not going to utilize the nutrients it needs to build muscle, protect the joints, and do everything it needs to heal from an injury or prevent an injury. So I really like to get a baseline look at blood work and see what's going on with the dogs and request that vitamin B12 and D are tested and get a baseline for that. Because B12 and D are the best indicators of how your gut is working.
Okay.
And if a dog is severely deficient, they will have gut problems.
Do you think that it's safe to add that in prior to getting a baseline? If people say, hey, can I just go get some vitamin D from the store, some B12 to add to my dog's diet?
No. Okay. So vitamin D can be toxic in high amounts. So that's something that needs to be checked every 6 to 12 months.
Okay.
If it's low, it's just going to cause issues. If it's high, it can be very toxic. So okay. It does need to be monitored. You want it right in that safe range so that it's a happy, healthy gut and dog. And then B12, that's usually an injection that's given by a veterinarian. So that would be something that's managed with vet care.
Okay.
That would be one of the main things I look at for senior dogs, especially if a senior dog has had a history of rounds of antibiotics. I've seen so many senior dogs that's had antibiotics for this, that, and the other thing, whether it be surgery, random diarrhea. In America, that's a big thing, is antibiotics for diarrhea.
We love antibiotics here.
I always tell my clients, if it's one-off diarrhea with not a huge frequency increase, try some Dr. Harvey's Runs Be Done.
Yes.
Give
that on hand, y'all.
Big dose. Like, we should be sponsored by Dr. Harvey's at this point.
I'm telling you, between you and me and Neely, I mean, Runs Be Done.
Dr. Harvey's is like, one of the best joint supplements I've found.
Really?
That has an adequate amount of type 2 collagen in it.
Okay. All right, Dr. Harvey's, do you hear this? Sponsor us all.
Sponsor.
Sponsor us.
So there's a lot of... I also like to advise people to ask questions and read the research when it comes to supplements, because so many clients, especially for older dogs, they're on Dasaquin or other... What's the other joint supplements? I'm drawing a blank right now. But yeah. The like joint chews. Mm-hmm. A lot of the chews have a ton of fillers in it. And they don't do anything, and they're not necessarily great. One of them has natural smoke flavor, which is not good for dogs.
Jeez.
So I'm not really sure why a veterinary-approved chew would have artificial flavoring.
And most of them don't have enough milligrams of the active ingredient.
Correct.
To do anything.
Correct. So you need a very large dose of all of these joint supplements to get the benefit from them. Mm-hmm. And the recommended dose is not up to that. So yeah. It's everyone asks me about that. I'm like, honestly, there's better things out there. There's also not anything out there. I half joking, half serious said to Dr. North the other day, I'm like, we need to make a supplement.
There we go. Let's get on it.
So the Dr. Harvey's one does have the collagen that is of adequate amount. And is type 2 collagen. So that's a big thing.
When do you think people should start that? Is that something that they should start? Like Willow being, mm-hmm. She just turned a year, right?
Yeah.
And she still has, what, 6 months of growth plate?
Yeah.
Right? So is that something that is needed for the life of the dog? Or do we wait until the dog has kind of got completed that and starting to show some slowdowns?
I would advise, if possible, to do it naturally. So if you're willing to go buy chicken feet and give them a raw chicken foot, one or two a week, just to start introducing the collagen and the tooth cleaning of that.
Yes.
I do like to advise people to do it naturally before on a chew.
Love it.
If the dog has like a severe chicken allergy, then the chew might be a better option because the collagen is not the protein that they would be allergic to. So type 2 collagen is usually from chicken, and I think a lot of people freak out when they see chicken in parentheses.
Yep.
But a true food allergy or sensitivity is to a protein, not a collagen. Collagen doesn't have the protein in it.
Okay.
Or the same type of protein.
So if you're looking like Tiffany will bring us collagen chews,
mm-hmm.
wrapped in like cod skin.
Yeah.
Dogs love it. Is that something that we could use to be the collagen that our dogs are getting?
They'd have to eat a lot of it, and then that could cause some GI upset. But I would not count that as the supplementation amount. They're great because they're not rawhide. They're a natural chew. They're easy to digest. But as far as getting an adequate dose, I wouldn't count that as an adequate dose.
Okay. So see, these are really good things. I got a chicken head or a duck head.
It's the feet.
In the closet right now that she needs to, but it's the feet that we're going for. Mm-hmm. And chicken is going to be the best.
Yeah.
Okay. So your dog can have chicken feet even if they have a sensitivity to chicken. Is that what you're saying?
Not necessarily.
Okay. See, I want to make people understand that.
Backwards.
Backwards.
So if your dog has a chicken sensitivity, lean more towards the chews.
Okay. And Dr. Harvey's chews is the only ones that we're recommending.
It's the only one I'm feeding my dog right now.
And that matters, y'all. That matters. When the PT says, this is what I'm using on my dog, and I'm going to tell you, and if any of y'all have listened long enough, you know who the hell Clark is. And Clark may be more popular than both Amanda and I put together.
Probably.
Yeah. So if Clark's getting it, then we know it's what is good.
Yeah.
Because he's going to get everything.
Yeah.
He's a good boy.
He gets the most.
He's get the most because he's the bestest. Except for Willow. Willow's the bestest. So we need to really kind of focus on with all of our dogs as they're starting to age. And that is another thing is when I see older dogs, people do just assume, oh, well, this is just part of it and this mm-hmm. is natural. When in fact, it's not natural. It's like saying, oh, well, you know, this person's in their 70s. They probably can't lift over 25 pounds. Mm-mm. Why do we do that? Why do we...
You don't have to get fragile as you age.
Right. It's like, yeah, I'm 50, but you're not going to know I'm 50. Right. Okay, my face may show it. But you're not going to know I'm 50 when it comes to the way that I present myself or the way I act or the way I be. Because
right.
Because you shouldn't have to. It's, you know, seeing some of these... I follow a lot of, personal trainers and stuff on social media, and to see some of these people that are like in their 80s and 90s doing shit that I can't even do
right
now.
Right.
And it's all because of keeping their body moving, eating the right things, and keeping that gut, having their collagen, right? I just had collagen with my protein shake. Mm-hmm. So I make sure that things stay, you know, going. There was this one video I found of this woman. She lives in Appalachia. And for those that don't know Appalachia, it's I don't want to explain this wrong because I might get yelled at. My wife is from Appalachia. It is what you would think of when it comes to country people. Okay. It is back country.
They have a lot of mountains. A
lot of mountains. It is, but they're homegrown.
They're good at living off the land.
They live off the land big time. But this woman was in her 80s. Mm-hmm. She could freaking play. I don't know if it was the guitar or the banjo, but her fingers were working in a way mm-hmm. that I have seen 60-year-olds not be able to do. And she said, they asked her, why do you believe this is the case? Well, obviously it's because she's going to continue working through her life and hard work. And that's another thing. People are like, oh, my hands hurt because I've worked so hard over the years. My dad right now is going to have knee replacements because of his knees, but he hasn't been taking care of himself. Right, with what he needed. Right. She said it was because she eats Jell-O every single day. Every day. She would eat Jell-O.
Yep.
And at that age.
Diet is huge. I mean, my great-grandma lived to be almost 102, and she had eggs and bacon every morning for breakfast.
Love that.
Yep. So.
We got to get outside. Let's stop making old and fragility normal.
Well, and that's kind of a good segue to the other point I was going to make for senior dogs is, the best free thing you can do for your dog is let them sit in the sun. Let them lay in the grass, walk in the grass, sit in the sun. The sun is healing. And same with humans. We've grown up in a society where the sun is bad. You need to wear sunscreen. You need to wear sunglasses. No, it's actually the opposite. You need to get, ideally, the morning sunrise and the sunset every night. Mm. The red light from that is the most healing thing you can do for your body. It resets your circadian rhythm. It helps your body heal. That's why red light therapy is a huge marketing tool right now. I utilize red light jackets with my clients and my own dogs. You have to make sure it has both near and far infrared. If it's just far infrared, it's not going to be worth much. It's the light that you can't see is what's healing.
Okay.
So let your eyes see the morning sun and the sunset.
Us people that don't like to get up in the morning have to get up in the morning. Although yeah. I do get up about 7 o'clock every morning now.
Yeah. The red light does help, especially in these colder, darker months. Okay. They do have those for humans, but also dogs. There's huge studies right now being done on dogs with near and far infrared and how healing it is.
Love
and
it.
How it heals anything from cuts, scrapes, infections, wounds to joint. There's one dog that was completely paralyzed and wore these jackets and now walks.
That's amazing.
So red light is extremely healing. Now, if you want to invest in a nice light mat or jacket, you can.
Yep.
But if money's an issue, sit outside and drink your coffee with your dog every morning.
Yeah.
Even if it's cold, put a jacket on.
Yeah. Hate the cold. Yeah. And, you know, because that was something that Rita talked about with the Herbal Dog Book, about how dogs need to get out and get in the dirt, get in the grass, roll in it, like get in it.
The grounding effects of the Earth's magnetic field is extremely healing. And we're starting to be able to mimic that and use it for our benefit with like PEMF mats.
Yes.
So we've just scraped the surface research-wise on that. I do utilize PEMF and red light in my services a lot. So I do recommend that. I do support the healing process. Humans cannot feel it. I mean, I feel it when my back hurts and I sit on the PEMF mat for like 20 minutes and get up, I feel better. Some people would say, oh, that's just placebo.
Right.
But when a dog goes and sits on it when it's on and isn't told to, yep. and then as soon as it turns off, they get up, that's a telling sign. Yeah. Yes. They can feel something that we can't. And then same with the red light. You give them a couple minutes in this jacket and they go from like, what am I wearing? Because it's kind of like a weighted blanket type feel.
Oh, that feels so good right
and
now.
And they're like, what am I wearing? Is it a straight jacket? And then you see their face melt. We call that the red light melt. And it's just, they just relax. A lot of the nervous or like timid dogs, dogs that don't love being touched will let me manipulate them. I use manipulate very loosely. I'm not doing chiropractic adjustments. I'm moving their limbs and stretching their body, hands-on work that they probably wouldn't normally let me do. It's being compared to traditional laser therapy and showing just as good, if not better, benefits than hot and cold laser.
Awesome.
So it's a lot safer. You don't have to worry about cooking a dog from the inside out.
Yep. No kidding.
So there's some huge benefits to red light for healing dogs, but also older dogs. Just helping them move better and they can walk around and use the sun for free.
Yeah, and here's the thing, guys. If we feel good, our behavior is automatically going to be better.
Right.
If your dog feels good, their behavior is going to be better. It's going to be more natural. Dogs know how to kind of adjust. Oh, let me just knock my microphone everywhere. Dogs
are getting heated.
I am. I get excited. But they do. They know how to kind of, deal with each other and kind of avoid that conflict that oftentimes comes up when we don't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that when I don't feel good, hell, I'm a lot shorter in my, like, I love when my cat rubs on me. I like it when Gemma rubs in my legs. She's giving me that energy. I love it. Except when I don't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm too swollen from inflammation. It's like that touch on me sends my nervous system through the roof.
Right.
And I do see a lot of dogs that don't like to be touched or rubbed on a lot. It's because their nervous system is so jacked up and it's always ready for fight or flight that they can't relax. And a lot of my clients, when I mention to them about bringing you in, most of them have this freeze look on their face going, my dog would never allow that.
Mm-hmm.
They would never allow a stranger to touch them. And you can only tell them so many times, like, no, trust me, right? It's going to do some good. And sometimes they just don't get it, right? But I think the more that we do this and the more we start talking about this and making it more normal, mm-hmm. right? Making it a more normal part of life and really focusing more on homeopathic work with our dogs, I think that we can increase the longevity of our dogs. We can increase the bonding with our dogs and yep. that connection with our dogs. I mean, the way that Willow looks at me when I do something for her, like when it's something she doesn't understand,
right?
And I help her, and she will bring things to me. Like if she's struggling with something, she'll bring it to me and look at me.
Yeah.
Like there was one day that she couldn't get the rest of the peanut butter out of the jar because it was all the way at the bottom. Mm. She brought it to me, and I told you this was my resource garter as a puppy.
Right.
She brought it to me, looked at me. She gave it to me. I went and then cut the rest of it off and handed it back to her so she'd get the rest of it.
Yeah.
Those looks, right? That bond, that connection.
Yep.
Knowing that when she is struggling with something, she comes to me for that guidance, changes everything, because that's going to help me to, one, recognize when she's struggling with something. So mm-hmm. if we're in public and something is uncomfortable, she looks to me.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm not sure about this. Mm-hmm. And I can help guide that. I can only imagine, and I hope I never have to help her heal from some type of injury, but I can only imagine what that feels like as an owner to see their dog that they thought that this was what they were going to have the rest of their life, whether that's a year, 2 years, 3 years, and to see that change and to kind of see that, not only the new connection, but
yeah.
just seeing the life come back into their dog's eyes.
Right. Well, and as part of preventative work for those clients that are scared, say if they have a bite history or mm-hmm. they don't want their dog to have a bite history and fear that any physical touch could.
Yes.
Preventatively, they need to be muzzle training their dog.
Absolutely.
Because I would rather someone say, my dog's going to wear a muzzle because I'm not sure how they'll react. They don't love being touched. But I need to do what's best for them.
Yep.
And have both of us protected.
Absolutely.
You know? So I'm a big proponent for muzzle training as far as care and cooperative care goes. Because yep. while I'm force-free and building relationship with the client is my number one goal, you never know how a dog is going to react to the pain.
Right.
And if it's a dog that you're fearful that it might snap, it needs to be muzzle trained.
Absolutely.
It doesn't necessarily need to wear a muzzle every time it goes for a walk.
No.
But if it needs to get its nails done at the vet, if you feel like it needs to wear a muzzle at the vet, it needs to be muzzle trained.
Absolutely.
For healing purposes. If you have to take an ER visit, you need to put that muzzle on and yep. let them get the care they need versus keeping them home and out of fear that they're going to bite someone and then
yeah.
go down that route of bite history. So that's a number one thing of preventative care that clients can do. A lot of the fun games that we think are like cool tricks or whatever, you would teach a puppy to shake or give paw and different things like that, those are great startup exercises for rehab. So there are a few dogs where they're like, oh, I never taught them paw. And like, the more tricks you can teach a dog, A, you're bonding with them, and B, those can then be utilized in a rehab setting mm-hmm. as far as sitting and standing, giving a paw, making sure they're comfortable having their paw in a hand, not necessarily being manipulated. I'm not grinding squeezing, their toenails. Right, I'm not touching, squeezing yep. it. But if they can lift up, I mean, the very basic strength test for a dog is to lift a paw up and see how the rest of their body reacts. So if a dog is paw aggressive, that's going to be a problem. Yeah. So getting a dog, like teaching a dog paw or shake with all four limbs, I mean, you don't necessarily have to teach them to lift their back leg, but you can say, oh, can I have your foot? And just pick it up and set it down so that they understand nothing scary is going to happen. I'm probably going to get a treat.
Right.
That's the number one thing I can tell people as a preventative and fun thing to do with your dog. There's so many tricks you can teach. Down, sit, show me your belly to roll on the yes. side. I do a lot of manual work in side lying position.
Yep.
Those are just They're fun to teach. Tricks are fun. Getting up on a bolster, getting down from a bolster, those things build confidence. If you see, I mean, Black Friday is coming up, so all the little dog equipment, if you want to get like a balance pad or one of those bone-shaped, the Fitbone, those are fun.
It's cute.
They're cute. They're fun. It's a new novel item for most dogs. And to get them familiar with like the very basic rehab stuff, but you can get creative with that and teach them tricks on it. And one of my clients was working on cooperative care, and so she sets her chin on any like bolster, and so we're working with that. She doesn't love her paws being touched, and so she'll put her chin on the bolster, and then I'll just pet her leg, give her a treat, and then she'll pick it up. And then when she puts her chin back down, pet the leg, give her a treat.
Love she'll
pick
it. It up.
So she's already learned that. So simple, cute tricks, yep, like putting your chin on a stool or something. Yep.
And that gives agency over the dog, for the dog, right?
Yeah.
So the dog feels more comfortable in being a part of the healing process,
yeah,
instead of being kind of forced into mm-hmm. it, which is going to possibly create more pain elsewhere because of tensing up for that fear of what's going to happen.
Right.
Giving them an out, I think, can help tremendously, right?
Yep.
We've talked about cooperative care 100 times here. But I totally agree with the basket muzzle, because for me, I tell clients, look, there's a lot of reasons that you may have to use one. But a lot of times I'll have clients get their dog acclimated to one because it's going to make the human more relaxed when working with the dog.
Yeah.
So, and that dog is going to feed off. So when you're working with dogs, are the owners there with them?
For the evaluations, yes.
Okay.
For those that don't know, my business is completely mobile. So I'm going into homes just like you're going into homes. Mm-hmm. I don't have a facility. So that makes it really easy for pet parents to work from home while I'm there. They don't have to take time off.
Excellent.
To treat their dog, take their dog to a clinic, get them treated. I mean, that's 2 to 3 hours off work.
Yeah.
So I'll come. So usually they'll be in the same room or just the room over working. Some clients are there hands-on with everyone. That's great. Either one is fine. And then we do a post-visit summary. I tell them anything I found, show them how to progress all their exercises if they weren't watching the entire 50 minutes. But it just depends on the schedule of the client. If they have to go take a call, they have to go take a call. But
imagine a person that's freaking out that their dog is going to bite you in the face, right? Of that energy, and that dog looking at their owners and being like, "Mom's really freaked out. Now I'm really freaked out."
Yeah,
it should not make things as easy.
Yeah, if a client's that scared, I'll have them send me a video before that their dog is truly muzzle trained, because what I don't want is for you to just slap a muzzle on your dog,
right,
and now they're associating the muzzle with mom's stress.
Yep.
And now someone's coming to my house, my safe space, and poking me.
Yep.
I don't want that. I want their muzzle to be like the best thing ever, and they know they're going to get treats despite their circumstances. So if the worry of a bite is that severe, I will ask for a video with a cue that the dog will then put their nose in the muzzle.
Excellent.
Because if the dog doesn't know how to do that, they haven't been properly muzzle trained.
Right.
And that's going to create fear, anxiety, worry from both the dog, the owner, me.
Yeah.
Because now the dog's unpredictable.
Exactly.
But I have really appreciated being able to utilize everything I've learned from you over the years.
Oh, yay.
Body language.
Good.
Number one thing I get asked is, have you ever been bitten? I'm like, why do people ask that?
That's good.
What
they just assume you have.
Have you ever been bitten? I'm like, not on purpose.
Not
like,
on purpose.
If I put my finger too close to a treat and the dog accidentally like gets a canine on my finger, that's not a bite. A lot of times a warning, if like a massage is painful, will be an open mouth on the hand, but they're not biting down. It's a warning.
Yep.
But that happens few and far between, because I can pick up on the ears go back. They look at me sideways. They start panting. I see a yawn.
Yep.
We're going to toss a treat. We're going to do something else. Then we're going to come back to it. And I will tell the owner, when I was working with the hip, for example, They started licking their lips, yawning, looking back at me really quick. They're like, oh, I didn't know the hip hurt. I'm like, they did not want me touching the hip.
Yeah.
So we'll work on that. And I'll usually have the owner then work on massaging and handling the hip. And by the next visit I'm there, it's like, okay, this is, it's getting better. We're doing exercises to strengthen, to stretch.
Good.
Mom's yep. touching it, massaging it and everything. So picking up, I think picking up on the level one cues
yes.
has really helped me, A, be safe, and B, pick up on things that probably most professionals don't pick up on.
Yeah.
Because some dogs, most dogs are very stoic, and they wouldn't see any of those three things I just mentioned as discomfort.
Right.
And I'm like, but if you, and sometimes I'll show the owner if I feel like the dog can tolerate it, and they'll look back at me, and then I'll go to the other hip, and
nothing.
You don't get that reaction.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh.
Yeah. That's why okay. I keep telling y'all to get the communication seminar. There's so many good reasons to be understanding dog communication.
Yeah.
Like, it's everything. To me, it's the foundation of everything.
Yeah.
Because you can start to see your dog if you're petting a certain area and you start to see some of these signs. Those are little bitty signs that your dog's saying, that's not comfortable. Mm-hmm. I'm stressed. Give me space. Little things. So it's not just about behavior when I talk about this communication, y'all.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Another big key is, and I've had a couple clients mention this before I mention it, is their coat is all going one way, but then they have like a little quiff come off. And
yes.
They're like, this part sticks up.
Yes. Like they have a cowlick.
Is that, yeah. But I don't think they've always had a cowlick.
Yeah.
And it's like, let's work on that muscle. And usually it's tender under there and there's mm-hmm. a stiffness, the fascia's tight. We need to work through all that and then it'll lay back down. So if you have a coat on a dog, it's a little harder to see on a poodle.
Yep.
But
yeah, it's.
But most, like even longer coated dogs like Aussies and that, they can get like what looks like a colic on their back and it's usually just tight fascia and muscles.
Now that would be Isabella
mm-hmm.
across the board, because speaking of an owner who doesn't do what you tell him to do, that would be Brittany.
She's busy.
She hasn't done shit with Isabella on that, just so you know. I'm totally throwing her under the bus.
Bless.
I know, but that's the thing. Some of the things that I know that, speaking of Isabella, I just kind of threw right back into that one. A lot of times you talked about kind of getting Isabella up on some things to stretch and like mm-hmm. stretching the stomach and stretching the hips. And what made me think about it is when Willow stood up on my counters. yeah, I just said that. Willow stood up on my kitchen counters. Yeah, no big deal, right?
I said, your mama's going to yell at you. And she said, I don't do that.
I don't yell at her. Willow gets away with pretty much everything, okay? But she wasn't messing with me. She was just trying to see you. But things like that of her standing up like that, I could use that onto something else to kind of help stretch those hips and stretch the belly
stretch
and make
and
things
strengthen.
Stronger.
Stretch and strengthen. The thing with getting them up on their hind legs, you really got to pay attention to the back. So you don't want them to have a C curve in their back.
Okay.
If their back is not in a straight line, like their spine is mm-hmm. not straight. If you can't put a yardstick or some dogs a ruler or a pencil. If you okay. can't put that on their spine, depending on the size of the dog. If you can't put a straight object on the spine and it stays straight when mm-hmm. they're standing, that means there's a compensation happening somewhere else. And okay. you don't want the hyperextension in the spine.
Okay.
So you need to really watch that.
Interesting.
But you can work up to that from lower and slowly work up. You don't have to go straight to couch height or counter height. You
okay.
can go on a little foam pad and then work up to coffee table height. Or I like to use, a lot of people have nice fireplace.
Like
their fireplaces are elevated, they're not on the ground, so that's a medium size. It's not quite as high as a chair, but it's higher than, it's not putting your paws on a coffee table, because a lot of people don't like paws on furniture,
right.
which is understandable.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can get crafty with surfaces in your house, and you can also teach a command with that, like paws up. That's a good
another one.
Behavior
yes.
of permission, pause up or off or pause down. What you can work that into the exercise. Because one of the funniest stories I have with that is Heather Garrett, who's been on the podcast.
I love her.
Her big boy Rufus is 130 pounds. And he's never put his paws up on anything because who wants a 130-pound dog on your counters?
No.
You don't.
No.
His nose is counter height. He doesn't need to put his paws
up. No, he doesn't. Yeah, he's huge.
Well, guess what Rufus's favorite exercise is?
Standing up?
Doing his hops. So his front, he's pushing up with his front paws and going onto his back legs. And he was doing that the other day to look out the window. And Heather asked him, Heather has the gift of communicating with her dogs. And she asked him what he was doing. Like, why are you putting your paws up? And he said, Dr. Amanda says it's good for me. And she said, only when you're working with her.
Oh, yeah. Not any other time. He's like, are you sure? You sure? Because the kitchen counter is looking pretty good.
But it was, luckily it was just to look out a window and he wasn't really being naughty to steal anything.
Not Rufus.
He was doing his exercise.
He was. He's a smart boy. And the look in his eyes. Look in his eyes. He can get away with everything.
Yeah. He's so sweet.
God, he's so awesome.
But yeah, so hip strength is big. I like him to sidestep. Sidesteps are huge. If they can, here's another fun activity to teach is backwards walking.
Okay.
It's very helpful if you need them to back up from a hot stove,
yep.
The counter, from anything. Just say back up. But you can teach that. It's one of the best ways to strengthen their hind legs.
Okay.
You want to make sure that they're walking in a straight line. So if they're veering one way or the other, there's a compensation going on. There's a weakness.
That reminds me of, I wish you'd have been around with Jake, because we used to laugh, and I've noticed with some other dogs, he would walk like a drunk person. That's what I would call it. So you're saying that that's possibly not just his personality, but there was issues somewhere that he's compensating
swing,
for.
Yeah. So, and that's most vivid to see if you ask them to walk backwards, thinking in a straight line, and they veer left or right.
Wow, okay.
So they're pushing more with one side versus another.
Okay.
So backing up is a good one. Sitting is a good one. Raising the paw is a good one.
And that's why I say, y'all stop punishing some of these behaviors. Just let your dogs know when there's an appropriate time and when there's not an appropriate time.
Yep.
Right? And that's important. So because there are going to be times that you may want to use this. If I'm punishing a dog for being on its back feet and aversively correcting that dog, and then I need to do rehab, gonna have a hard time. So now we're gonna make it more of a mental issue as well.
Yeah.
With the physical, you know, healing process of needing to be on your back feet when they're like, I don't want to be on my back feet because I've gotten in trouble for that so many times. You're just trying to trick me.
Right.
That's not good.
Yeah. You don't want it to feel like a trap.
Right.
To the dog. A simple no thank you and guiding them somewhere else is.
And that's probably the biggest thing that I've changed with Willow.
Or get the hell out. You know, I know you like that one.
Oh, you know I love that shit. What the hell are you doing? Would you shut the fuck up, please? I mean, yeah, that is me. But Willow and I still have those conversations. I do have that conversation with her to where I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Would you get your feet off my... That is not where you put your feet. Right? And she looks at me like, what do you know?
Right.
And then goes and grabs a toy.
Well, George is at the point where he does something naughty and then goes stares at his crate with his head down because he knows he needs a timeout.
He's like, I can't adjust, so I'm going to need you to put me in my
did
crate.
Did I just go eat Clark's entire snuffle mat? I sure did. I'm going to need a timeout.
Yeah. I would think Mom needs a timeout if you allowed him to go get Clark's snuffle mat. I'm putting Mom
We're
and Tom
We're working
out.
Really well on leave it, automatic leave it.
There are just
some days he gets it, some days he doesn't.
Look, that's like you trying to say, I'm going to put chips and salsa in front of you, Nikki, and we're going to work on automatic leave it. It ain't going to happen if you're not standing there to now, smack you upside the face.
George will leave Clark's bowl of food if he leaves scraps. He doesn't touch the bowl.
Really?
So we're trying to generalize that. Yeah. He's really struggling with generalizing.
It's like, you know what? We're hunting. We're supposed to be hunting together.
It's like, I don't know when the next time I'll get fed.
Because I never get fed on time.
Never.
Whatever.
Homemade
George,
meal.
Bless him. Yeah, they're spoiled. They're just spoiled. So it all kind of makes sense when we start thinking about, we have to really start thinking outside the box and getting more focused on, seriously, y'all, looking at the dog as a whole.
Yes.
As a whole. And this is why it's important that if you are working with professionals, whether it's behavior work, well, mostly I'm talking behavior work, you got to have a team. Mm-hmm. I have a good team, right? Now, Amanda's not on my team, but I use the hell out of her when my clients will listen. And the same thing with Dr. North.
Yeah.
Right? Now, she's not taking any new clients in Nashville. I'm so sad because she's so damn good. She's so busy, she has to go to Nashville and Savannah.
Yeah.
So, but finding a team is important because sometimes it is about looking at the whole dog.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have a shout out to Lizzie because Lizzie came here to work with us from Texas. And I knew after like the first day I saw her at her Airbnb, I'm like, you need to get in touch with Amanda and see if she can come see you. And you guys made some great progress. And she's been making some great progress at home.
Yeah.
We're very proud of you, Lizzie, by the way. I know you're listening. We're very proud of you. And I showed you the pictures of the cute, you know, the dogs laying near each other. Because this was some inner pack aggression issues. But they both had their own kind of physical issues with their shoulders.
They both had shoulder and neck issues and hip. They both just had random but similar issues, not some from an injury, some not, just tightness, compensation maybe over the years. Mm-hmm. We're not really sure how certain things happened. She had reason to know why one of their neck hurts and why mm-hmm. one of their shoulder hurts. But other than that, I mean, if you're roughhousing and then your brother's always hurting you,
right,
you're going to get mad.
Absolutely.
And he doesn't mean to hurt you, but then now it becomes an inner pack problem.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly the thing. It's really important that when you're having problems with behavior, you don't just immediately go, okay, and this is the newsletter that I put out last week, and the episode from last week, is that obedience training does not need to be your go-to. Mm-hmm. Right, you don't need to go look at obedience training to fix everything. We need to look at the whole dog. There's always going to be an underlying reason to what we're seeing, whether that is a fear from negative associations, whether that's a fear because, yeah, my ankle hurts, and every time I play with my brother, I tweak my ankle. Therefore, I'm going to associate my brother with tweaking my ankle and pain. Now I'm going to try to keep him from playing all the time. And my brother doesn't get it because he's just playful, right? And so then it causes problems over time, or gut health. That's huge as well. There's just a lot to look at. And sometimes you do have to get very creative with the program and make sure you have a village. We are a village.
Yeah.
And although we don't share all clients, you have yours and I have mine. We do at times have to collaborate together mm-hmm. to say, hey, what are we having here and what can we do to help these dogs feel better? And I have a ton of like dachshund clients right now. And luckily a couple are just puppies, but I do have a couple with behavior problems. And I had already started to see, as I saw them, I'm like, oh, there's some pain here. And my last, I saw some clients not too long ago. I said, I think you probably need to see Amanda. Amanda needs to come see you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, well, maybe just get one of those PMR. It was a PMR blankets.
PMF.
PMF blankets. I had to go do some research. So I was like, I'm going to send that to you. That might be a good one to have so they can at least lay on that. And
mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of things that we can do. And it's not just about training, as I put those in air quotes, because I really hate that. But I also think there are a lot of preventative, but also things that we can start to do now to help our dogs be prepared mm-hmm. for possible injury and possible things,
yeah,
you know, in the future.
And especially as the weather's getting colder.
Yes.
And I know it's getting cold in Nashville, but also all around the world. A fun thing to do is just find a YouTube page or a book on Amazon of fun dog tricks. It doesn't have to be serious. Your dog could be the worst behaved dog, but if you want to bond with them, teach them some fun tricks. Like, how fun is it to, like, say bang and your dog plays dead?
Yeah, that's really cute.
So fun.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be cooped up inside if you really don't want to take your dog for a walk in the cold. But, like, do something that enriches their mind, builds a bond, and prepares them for hopefully the injury they'll never have. But if they do have it, they'll know how to give paw or roll over or show me your belly. And just step up, pause down, pause up, pause down. Winter is a great time for teaching fun, useless tricks that become very useful when needed.
Yes.
And it's a great bonding experience. And also, since it's getting close to Christmas, if you're getting a puppy, Dremel one nail a day for the first 6 months of its life.
There you go.
Because you need to have short nails on your dog.
Yes, we did a little video and a post on using the scratch board.
Scratchboard is great for older dogs, but okay. puppies, if they get their nails Dremeled, at least, like, I'm not saying do all of their nails every day, literally one a day.
Just get them used to it.
Get them used to the sound, the vibration, the treats that come with it.
Yep.
It's part of their routine, because by the time you do all 10 toes,
it'd be time to start over.
It's going to take you 10 days to do it, and you just keep doing it, and it's a daily routine. But if you do all 10 toes at once, if they have dew claws, 12. If they have back ones, 13, 14, sometimes 15, 16.
Yeah, right.
But if you do all of them at once, then it's a week, 2 weeks later, oh, shoot, I need to do the dog's nails again. And now they're older. They're in a new phase of life.
Yep.
Every week their brain changes. So if you're Dremeling them daily and just one nail, you're taking 5 seconds of their time to get them used to that.
Yep.
And sending them on their way. That's going to be huge down the road, because so many, especially dogs that don't need to go to a groomer regularly.
Right.
They end up having long toenails. Long toenails affect how they grip the floor, how they walk, toenails are the biggest precursor to everything. So if you do one thing when you get a puppy, you trim their toenails.
I'm glad you brought that up, because it is true. I see so many dogs of my clients where their nails are way too long, and you know there's going to be some pain somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because it does. It messes with the gait. And I can't imagine them, getting it caught in something.
Right.
And then ripping and tearing, and then that's mm-hmm. a whole other thing. Now they got to go under anesthesia, and we got to cut it back. And, that was probably one of the most common injuries that I would say when I worked at the vet, were things that happened with the toes and the nails, because the nails were not being done mm-hmm. regularly. I like the Dremel. I haven't done the Dremel with Willow. I've done the scratch board, but it doesn't get all of her nails on the scratch board.
Right.
But she's really good at me cutting them, and we've managed that. But I just never started the Dremel. I wanted to. I just use a really emery board now when I need to get them. I'm like, let me just do the emery board here. But those things, we have to really start being proactive, people. Being proactive with our dogs and not waiting until we have a problem. Muzzleup.org is a great website for muzzle acclimation, purchasing a basket muzzle, fitting a basket muzzle. That is an important thing to do. And I do believe that every dog needs to be acclimated to a basket muzzle, even though I haven't done it to my dog yet. Because I do think there's going to be times mm-hmm. that we need to have it. And especially if it's something that is scary for the dog, but also very stressful for the owner. So that the owner can be more relaxed, because hopefully the dog is looking to the owner as the tour guide, the upper management, see how they're going to be responsive, and can find calmness in that. Do you offer virtual sessions for people that don't live in the Middle Tennessee area?
I do.
Awesome. And where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at 615K9PT.
Awesome.
That is also my website, 615K9PT.com.
All right.
615 is the Nashville area code, for those that don't know.
That's right.
You can Google that, 615K9PT.
And we're going to link that in the show notes.
Link it in the
615K9PT. You're staying busy.
I am.
If you'd stop freaking traveling everywhere. I've seen her twice this year. This is the second time, and it's November the 12th. Second time this year. I appreciate you stopping by today and recording this, because I think this is something people need to be aware of, that we don't have to just let our dogs be in pain, have mm-hmm. discomfort, and we don't have to just fill them full of meds that are fucking with their kidneys and messing with the liver and throwing out the cheese.
I'm going to add one thing since you brought up meds. Yeah. That pain relief from that, that's an injectable that is very highly researched and reputable, and Clark gets it. That's the gold standard, right?
It really is the gold standard. Clark gets it.
Dr. North recommended it, and Clark gets it. So
done.
Double whammy right there. It's Adequan. It shows great improvement with all my arthritic clients.
Awesome.
Okay. So if you are looking for something more effective, I guess is the word I'm looking for, more effective for specifically joint arthritic pain, ask your doctor, your vet, about Adequan.
There you go. You heard it here the 18th time, people, because we know that has been out several times. that we have seen problems with that.
Yeah. And it's not just they become, it's neurologic problems, it's kidney problems, it's death within a few days.
Yeah, I had a friend's dog die from it.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, it's...
It can exacerbate known conditions, and then they're kind of saying, well, the dog already had...
Yep.
XYZ, it's probably just that.
Yes.
If your dog does have an adverse reaction to a Librela shot, take it to the ER and ask for a kidney flush. It might run you about $5,000, but it also might save its life.
Holy crap. How about we just avoid it?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just avoid that. And that's rough.
It's a scary drug.
That's scary. So let's get some... You know, proactivity, let's keep our dogs healthy, let's make sure they're in good health with their gut, make sure they're not overweight.
Supplement some real food.
Supplements real food, people, whole food, so that we can treat the whole dog.
You don't have to spend $5,000 feeding your dog fresh food, but if you top it with like a chicken foot, some veggies, liver every now and again, like you can supplement with real ingredients.
Absolutely.
To get the benefit.
Absolutely. Or be like me, where I go buy a pack of pork chops and I eat half the pack and Willow eats half the pack. This is how I cook now.
I do that with steak.
Do you? You give half your steak to Clark?
I made him 2 ribeyes for his birthday.
That's ridiculous. Okay, I made her a big pork butt. And then I made myself a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I am not lying about that story. I literally pulled her pork butt out of the crock pot and said, okay, baby, it's got to cool down. And then I made myself a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It's ridiculous.
No, I usually, if there's steak getting cooked, one or two is going to Clark and I'm eating the rest, but.
Damn. No, you ain't getting out of my steak, Willow. I love you, but you ain't getting any of my damn steak. I already share everything else. Well, I appreciate you talking about this today. I think we need to come back and do this again. Are you planning any online webinars, any type of things like that you probably weren't, but now I'm throwing it over across.
Not right now, but I feel like we could do a webinar, or we could do a social media series of like the 12 tricks of Christmas and how they relate to behavior. Ooh, and PT.
That'd been fun if we'd started back in July to come together.
So maybe.
Do you think we could actually get that together before December?
I feel like we could.
Okay.
We could. If we put our heads down, we could.
Yeah, we're going to put our heads down. Your fiance's coming in town. There ain't no putting heads down right now. He's going to be coming in town. And
we need a cameraman.
You'd be so distracted.
It's fine. We need a cameraman.
Oh, you're right. We could. All right. You hear that, buddy? You're booked. You're booked while you're here. Not only are you going to be cooking and feeding us, but you're the cameraman.
There we go. He can be on the smoker or grill.
I like that.
And we can be working.
I think we need to do that. Let's try to work on that. All right. So you guys keep that in your mind that we might have that. The 12, what are we calling it? The 12?
12 tricks of Christmas. I don't
12
know.
12 tricks of Christmas.
It's like the 12 pubs of Christmas in Ireland, where you go to, there's different rules at
each
pub. I like
the 12 pubs of Christmas better than 12. You know, I suck at teaching tricks.
Maybe we intertwine, like, drink a beer with each trick we teach, and then by trick 12, it'll just be a laugh for everyone.
You know what? That might not be a bad idea. What do y'all think? Send us some ideas. What tricks would you like to see? I think we need to work on something.
Could do, like, we could even, if everyone wants to send in questions, we could do 12 questions.
I like that.
We could do, and we would post like one question a day, or like if there's a group of similar questions.
I like that. Look at that.
Let's get our listeners.
Yeah, I haven't quite got the podcast to a viewing part yet. I don't want to record my face that whole time. That whole video podcast thing. I think we need to do something like that. All right. Yeah. All right, guys. So if you have questions, behavior, physical, those type things, how to teach a certain trick, because Amanda's great at teaching tricks. She's great at like task work and shit. So I think that this would be a really good fun thing. So start sending in your questions. It is November 12th. Let's get them sent in. Let's get them sent in by the end of the month. How's that?
Yeah.
Send us your questions by the end of the month. Tell us any ideas you'd like to see, how we can incorporate some things. And then we probably need to do like a triple podcast with me, you, and Neely.
Yeah.
So we can really all get into it. Maybe do a case study on something. Maybe we look at a case and say, this is how I would look at this. This is what I would look at. And this is what you would look at. That might be something fun.
I think we probably have one or two clients that all three of us share.
I think we do. Okay, so we need to get on that. Look at that, guys. Got a whole new series going.
If you have me, Nikki, and Dr. North on your team, let us know.
Yes.
And maybe you too can be on the podcast.
That's right. Look at that. Well, we know exactly one person for sure, and that'd be Heather. Heather, yeah. You want to come back on the podcast? It's been a while since I've seen her. But
it has.
Yeah. Last time I think I saw her, she was backing out of the parking lot at Neely's. She was backing out of the driveway, and I didn't get to say hi. I miss Charlie. Charlie, come see me. Only Charlie knows. Charlie, tell your mama next time you're speaking with her that you need to come see Aunt Nikki, or that Aunt Nikki needs to come see you. That's all I'm going to say. So we're going to find out. Oh, and we need to get the communicator on here, because that'd be good, too. That'd be fun. I don't know. I'm all over the place right now. But now I got to go see little mini dachshunds I'm very excited about, because I just love dachshunds. And that's maybe something we need to talk about, or some of the specific. Do you see more issues with dachshunds? Before I wrap this up, and this is one of the longest episodes we've had in a while, but do you see more problems with dachshunds? Because, you know, people get very paranoid with dachshunds, with the jumping and the back issues and things.
The number one issue with dachshunds is that they're fat.
Okay. So we just
keep them. You keep a lean dachshund, and keeping a lean dachshund and a lean Frenchie, that's going to require you to do, require. It's going to require you to feed it a good, clean, weight appropriate diet. One of my dachshund clients that had IVDD, so she had disc disease, so basically blew out a disc in her back and became paralyzed. She's walking again. But I recommended her to switch food. She was on a weight management food. Mm. And I said, let's switch to something healthier like Ziwi. Yep. Yeah, it's expensive. But when you're feeding an eighth of a cup
exactly,
twice
it's not,
a day.
It's really very affordable.
It's $100 a day to feed my dogs.
That's ridiculous.
But it's $100 a month right. to feed a little dachshund. So she, just by making the simple switch to a higher nutrient available food, she dropped 2 pounds in a month.
Love it.
And so, like, just keeping the dachshunds, keeping the Frenchies, keeping all dogs really, but dogs that are prone to like the back issues and they should be able to jump. Get them some stairs. They can go up and down.
Because that was another thing.
But they need to be strong. And if their bellies are too heavy for their legs to support,
right,
their back is going to take the blow.
So that reminds me of, like, a lot of my dachshund puppy owners don't want their dogs going up and down stairs. Is that appropriate right now at a puppy stage, or should we be having them work stairs to help build what they need to build?
I wouldn't have them going up and down stairs 5 times a day.
Okay.
But going up and down a few is appropriate because they need to build the strength.
Okay. Those are the things that people don't think about. That those are the little questions that I usually have of what's going to be the most appropriate so we don't create those problems, but that we also aren't giving them what they need in order to avoid the problems.
Well, and how big of an issue is it in the life? Are they going to have to go up a flight of stairs to go to bed? If that's the case, then yeah, they absolutely need to have the strength and ability to do that. If they only have 2 steps to go outside to go potty and it's not really necessary for them, and you have the ability to build a ramp, ramps mm-hmm. are going to be healthier. That'll still keep them strong. If it's something that the dog needs to do, then yeah, they need to do it.
Okay.
So I would never tell a dog owner, your dog can't do something that it has to do.
Right.
We need to make sure they can do it safely.
Okay. Yeah. Because there's a cute little ramp that we do with these little dachshund pups. And we taught them to go down the ramp and up the ramp. But it's pretty steep.
Yeah.
And I mean, and the steps are pretty big steps right now. So they're mini. So they don't have the capacity to do it. But it's so cute to watch them on the ramps.
Ramps are great. I love ramps for rehab.
Fantastic.
You can have them walk backwards up a ramp. That'll get their legs nice and strong.
Ooh, that's a good one. All right, Willow, we got a lot to do.
There's so much you could do that so are much just doing. So fun you can do around your house.
See, that's why, yeah.
It's
that's
for free.
We need to do a quick video of those things. We need to do, like, some videos of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Send in your questions. Thanks for joining me. Y'all know where to find her, 615K9PT. Just Google it. She does offer virtual. It will require you to do a lot of video, I assume.
Yes.
Videoing of your dog. That's very important.
And it will be a video chat. Like, it'll be like a Zoom.
And a good Zoom virtual session for that. I know this is going to be a question people are going to ask, so I'm going to ask, do you take pet insurance? And does pet insurance typically cover your PT?
Pet insurance, most pet insurance, if your policy covers rehab, it will accept the claims. So pet insurance is different than human insurance. You don't have to find someone who accepts it. Your pet insurance policy has to cover rehab. And so how that works is you pay for the appointment in full, and then I send you the invoice and you submit that to your pet insurance.
Excellent.
So there's no issue there. If you do have pet insurance, I do typically require all in-state people with pet insurance to have a vet script signed.
Okay.
Because a lot of pet insurance require that. But for virtuals,
you're good.
It just depends. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Makes sense. Because I know people are probably thinking that question.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure if virtual is covered, but we can try.
Yeah. All right. Check with your insurance companies, guys. Either way,
we can play the game.
It's worth it.
Yeah.
It's worth it to help your pet feel better. Instead of just putting a Band-Aid on everything and medications and supplementation. Right, there's things that we can be more active to do to help our dogs. Thanks for joining me.
Of course.
I'm going to go see mini dachshunds now. All right, guys, I hope that you have taken advantage of everything that we've been putting out lately and that you've enjoyed it. And if you're having any type of issues or even concern with your dog having some pain, even if your vet has found nothing, you need to reach out to Amanda and let her look at it, because I'm going to tell you something. She is damn good at what she does. And that's why she's part of my village. Because if you ain't good, you ain't going to be a part of my village. It's just as simple as that. I require the highest of standards. But anyway, I do hope you guys have enjoyed this. Check her out. Be sure you've signed up for the newsletter. Follow us on social media. Follow Amanda on social media. Put in your questions. Send us your questions. info@dogspeak101.com. And I'll put everything into the show notes along with the Dr. Harvey's Run Be Duns, which you've heard about 1,400 times, as Dr. Neely and Dr. Tracy had said. That's something you need to keep in your cabinets all the time. It's very, very useful. And hey, Dr. Harvey, sponsor us.
Please.
Y'all have a great rest of the week.